At Lowe's, this Veterans Day and every day, verified military members, veterans, and their spouses get automatic silver status in MyLowe's Rewards with free standard shipping, plus 10% off eligible purchases with no annual limit. It's one way we honor and give back to those who have served and still do. Learn more now at Lowe's.com/military. 10% discount can't be combined with another offer. Exclusions, terms, and conditions apply. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Details at Lowe's.com/terms. Subject to change.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Welcome to Playful Beginnings, a podcast about the magic of play therapy for therapists, students, and anyone interested. In our podcast, we'll explore the deeper understanding of play therapy and the skills we use in working with children.
We hope to help you understand the why behind what we do and how it helps kids heal and grow. I'm Dr. Christy Opiola, a working play therapist and university professor in North Carolina.
I'm Dr. Maggie Parker, a play therapist and professor in DC.
Hey, Christy.
Hey, Maggie.
How are you?
I'm okay.
I know, I kind of laughed as I said that because for our listeners, Christy and I have just spent the last 30 minutes talking about how stressed we are.
I know, it's like, how do I authentically answer that? And yeah, it's just a busy time of the year. So we both have sometimes more tasks on our plate than there is time to complete them.
And then like full transparency and genuineness, which we talk about a lot, we are both stressed. And so I don't know if people know this about Christy, is that not only is she a play therapist and working with kids each week, she's also a professor and she is in charge of the play therapy program as well as doctoral programs. And so we're in the middle of doc interview season. So lots of meetings and getting to know people and trying to kind of understand what that experience is. So in addition to teaching classes.
Yeah. And other administrative responsibilities that come with all said roles for both of us, because Maggie's underselling. She also does a ton. It's hard to balance. And so
it is.
And we love this podcast. So it's hard not to want to talk about play therapy.
Yeah.
So my head gets pulled sometimes in two directions.
It is. I think that's one of the hardest things. And this isn't what we had just talked about, but I wanted to bring it up because it's been not heavy on my mind, but something that I've been thinking about since we talked with Dee Ray last week. And I asked her about, if she heard anybody in her head when she was with kids in the playroom. And she was talking about how, you know, she really focuses on the relationship. And I've been really reflecting on that because I'm like, I don't know if my brain is ever able to focus on one thing. And even like you and I, as we were kind of talking and preparing ourselves for this, we were talking about how we're often divided.
Yes.
And I think that's one of my biggest struggles. And what I'm realizing is my brain is just a little different. Sometimes it's very hard for me to be singularly focused, even in the playroom.
Yeah, I would say 90% of the time I do a pretty good job of that. So when I walk into my play space, I can hyper focus. I will say though, there are some things that make that harder to do. And maybe a year ago or a year and a half ago, I switched to the Apple Watch.
Yes.
And that is really distracting, Maggie, in the playroom. I just didn't know. I liked the face of it. I lost my classic watch. And so I was like, well, if I'm going to invest in another watch, I might as well do this Apple Watch. But I like really have to be mindful to put it in airplane mode and put my phone in airplane mode or do not disturb, because you just get calls and other things. And then it completely takes me out of the moment with the child. Now that was like a little tangent, but what I was going to say before that is I really appreciate mentors I had early in my training and career that talked about creating rituals to get yourself present and in the current space and time. Because I think that has been really helpful for me to be mindful when I walk into this space, or what do I need to do so that I can really be present in this moment with clients. And I find it's other things that are disruptive sometimes. So there's new noises in the building, or my office, or the space I rent for a day, because I'm out of the office just one day a week, is an old building. So it tends to always have like air conditioning or heat problems. It's a beautiful space, but sometimes the room is like stifling. I don't know, maybe 2 or 3 weeks ago, I wore a tank top under my outfit so that I could take my shirt off so that I could have a tank top on, because I knew how hot the building had been. And we have been particularly cold in North Carolina, so I knew the heat would be like cranked up.
You're just like sweating.
And the kids are sweating too, right? Like, I'm making sure I have water available and other stuff just to make it palpable. I have all the fans on. But it's like little things like that that I think pull me out of the present moment when I'm just really uncomfortable, or these other factors influence. But
when you're so thoughtful about that, I think that's what I appreciate every time we talk, is that you are able to really look at a situation and see it from all angles. And that's something that I have to really struggle to do. Like, I'm quick to just respond. And so I really appreciate being able to sit with you and think about it, because that you're so thoughtful and intentional about the things you do. And I think just thinking about the water and like, oh, I need to dress a certain way, because sometimes I feel like I'm flying by the seat of my pants and I don't know what I'm doing until I get there.
Some days I am too. I'm like, oh God, I forgot it was so hot in this office, because I only go in one day a week. So like, I, you know, like you wear this heavy sweater and you're like, oh, I'm not going to make it through this session today. My poor kids. And they're more active than I am as the play therapist. I'm, you know, unless they invite me into the play, I'm sitting there. Some of them are, you know, playing full out scenes or making basketball hoops out of buckets and other stuff, and you know, like running around the playroom, and I'm like, oh my God, how are you not passing out in here?
Molly wouldn't know what to do with herself. She runs so hot.
I know. Yeah.
She'd be like, I gotta take all my clothes off.
And then you're setting limits. Like, I know you're really hot, but the playroom is not for, you know, taking all your clothes off in.
Yeah.
But thank you. But I also think sometimes thoughtfulness can be destructive too. So like, I hear you saying, you know, I'm really good at like responding in the moment. Sometimes I wish I had that quality too, because I have to think through everything.
Yeah.
So, and I think every quality that we bring in brings some type of value into the relationship, you know?
Absolutely.
So. Yeah.
Well, and this is kind of like going back to your Apple Watch. I've shared this with you. So I had a new Apple Watch and I was in session. All of a sudden my watch is blowing up. Like, what is happening? And the daycare where my kids were, I guess something happened, like the power went out or something. And so I'm getting text messages from the school that I have to come pick them up. I'm getting text messages from Lee. I'm getting, you know, and Lee had just started a new job because we had just moved to DC. And so he's trying to get his footing. So I feel, which is a whole other thing about how I feel protective over his career, that I need to make space for him and my flexibility. So all of these things are happening in my head while I'm also dealing with the concreteness of I have to pick up my children from school, like something needs to happen. And Lee was
and you have a full schedule for the day.
And I had a full schedule and a client in the room, right? Mm-hmm. And Lee worked in Maryland, so he's 45 minutes away. Like, you know, so it's like all of this stuff is coming at me within a space of a minute while I'm sitting in the room with this child. And so I'm trying to navigate it like very discreetly on my phone. And so I'm like, started a group text on my phone with my parents and Lee being like, mom, dad, can you go pick up Rhodes and Molly, because they moved to DC when we moved to DC, which is very nice. Shout out to Baba and Pop-Up. And all of this stuff is happening, right? And so then I'm like, after 5 minutes, then I'm focused again. I'm back in the moment. I've got my kids taken care of. Here we are. So the next week, this client comes in, same client, and the mom was like, hey, listen, I just want to let you know, she really did not like this and did not want to come back. I was like, yeah, okay. And then after this session where there were no such distractions and I was focused and able to be fully present, she gave me a huge hug and was like, I don't want to leave. I love it here. And that transition. And so I remember calling you like, I can't believe this. And you go, Maggie, you know, you could just say, oh no, something's come up. I need to step out for a second. And how much more genuine and transparent that would have been, because this child thought that I didn't care. And thinking about, you know, I don't necessarily know that for sure, but like the messages that I was sending was that I'm not here. And that you don't matter enough for me to be focused on you. And it was just such a...
Sometimes I think the internal message is what's wrong with me, that what's on her watch or phone is more important than what's happening in the room. I've seen that with some adults clients that I've seen. I think I shared this message with you or shared this story. My grandmother had died. My grandmother had had a stroke. She hadn't died yet. She had a stroke. And my mom called me 10 minutes before a client was coming to session. And this client drove a long way to come see me. So I was like, oh gosh, what do I do? But like, that's just news you can't predict for. Just kind of like you couldn't predict there was like a power outage or emergency at the daycare. That's just stuff we can't manage to deal with. And I was like, okay, just get yourself together and get through this session. And then you can look at, because then I had a break that I could look at, do I need to reschedule? Like, how am I doing? I just didn't even have time. I think I was frozen from the news or like in total problem solving mode. And I've shared this on the podcast before. My background has been working in some medical facilities. And so like, I do have and at the time I had a better grasp of kind of like the medical world. And so sometimes my family leans on me for processing or asking questions of that. And I say, I'm not a medical provider. This is my understanding of it, but I think you need to ask the doctor, whatever. But so I feel this added responsibility when these things come up. And I don't know if I put that on myself or my family puts it, whatever. That's a whole different discussion for my therapist. But I just tried to like play through this session with this adult client. And about halfway through, I just noticed the session wasn't going well at all. Like this client wasn't showing up the same, things were different. And I recalled a workshop I had attended with Dr. Landreth, and he had not the same situation, but had something similar where they were really distracted and he wasn't able to be fully present. And he just like kind of announced it to the client. So I was like, okay, I'm gonna take this big risk. I really don't know how this is gonna go. So I just shared with the client, I'm so sorry, I feel off today. I got a call right before you came about family member that is ill and I'm like distracted. I haven't been able to get myself fully present. And the client goes, oh, thank God. I thought something was wrong with me. And so I was like, oh gosh, Dr. Landreth is so wise. The authenticity, the genuineness. And when we aren't showing up that way or we are acting differently, comprehending that our clients might view what's happening internally for them, especially if they're coming for things related to how they feel about themselves, if they feel incompetent, struggling relationships, stuff like that. Our relationship is kind of a blueprint of kind of some of those natural things that happen in the real world. And so sometimes, yeah, just announcing it to the client to be like, oh gosh, I just got this important message that I need 2 minutes or I need a minute. Or I've even said to a child client before, hey, someone keeps calling me back to back to back and back on my phone. And she goes, I know, they're annoying. And I was like, I know, right? And I feel like they really need to talk to me. And she's like, well, do you need a minute? And so I like just texted the client really quick. And I'm like, in session, you know, kind of what's up?
You okay?
Text it right back to be like, we have a flat tire. We can't make the appointment. And I was like, oh, okay, great.
Great.
And then I could be present again. So even just taking 1 minute out of the time instead of hiding it makes, for me, a big difference. I don't know that that's the...
Well, I think it's...
No, it's not the book answer. The book answer should be totally present all the time. And gosh, I'd love to be that person.
It's just not possible. And I'm trying, you know, we also had that conversation about positive self-regard. And I'm trying to get there, right? Because I can beat myself up pretty regularly, you know, and it's difficult for me to be super present. And I'm just starting to realize, and I caution everybody about looking at, you know, TikTok and Instagram for mental health resources. And I've also found a couple that help me understand how my brain works, that I can then go to the texts and really kind of understanding and then be more compassionate to myself. Like my brain's just different. I do experience emotions on a scale of like from 0 to 10, and it is hard for me to rein everything in. And that's also a really great thing because I can be really creative and I can think outside of the box, right? But it is also, I think, important to recognize that there's a difference between sharing like transparency and genuineness with our clients. Like, hey, it seems like someone needs my attention for a second, or I want to recognize that I'm kind of being odd and this is what's going on. And then relying on them to be your therapist, right? And I think there's a really fine line, especially when we talk to kids. And so I think like being genuine and authentic is important. And it's not going to be me saying to a child, like, you're really pissing me off right now. You know, like, I'm not going to do that. But I think sometimes those two things can be confused, I guess.
I think that takes a lot of clinical intentionality of that idea of like, what does genuineness truly mean? And what does authenticity truly mean? And what is the impact, mm-hmm. right? Like in the moment around when I choose to be authentic. And I don't even want to say choose to be authentic, but maybe when I choose to disclose something and when I choose not to disclose something. Because I think, I mean, our goal is to, you know, be you.
Mm-hmm.
One of the best pieces of advice I ever got was, you can't be someone that you're not. Like, you can't be Gary, you can't be Dee, you can't be Sue. I can't be Maggie, Maggie can't be Christy, right? That's impossible. So like having some self-acceptance and just learning about yourself, about how do I show up in this space?
Mm-hmm. And I think, I know this is kind of veering it off in a different direction, which again, here's my neuro spicy brain coming in. But, you know, when I've had clients that I struggle with, and there have been clients that I struggle to have, you know, unconditional positive regard. And that's where I find it's not that I'm going to tell them in that space, like I'm frustrated, right? I mean, I might, like, I don't know, like there haven't been many opportunities where I felt that I needed to share that information, but I have been able to then go get supervision. And I don't think that we necessarily always have to like our clients, but it's our responsibility to understand what's going on for us, because it's us. And so when I can try and understand the client and what that's pushing up against for me, then I can have unconditional positive regard because I'm able to see things differently. And I've had, I think one of the most poignant times for this is a client who really struggled to be in relationship across the board and took some very drastic measures to keep themselves out of relationship. And, you know, I was getting frustrated because they were like, I hate the playroom and the playroom's stupid and I hate your toys and all of this stuff. And it was really fascinating because they would stand in the corner for all 45 minutes. They wouldn't engage. They wouldn't look at the toys. They would stand with their back to me in the corner, right? So when I went and got supervision, and at the time it was from Dr. Casey Lee, shout out, at Lipscomb University. She does great trainings. She was like, well, let's unpack this. Like, how scared is this child to be seen? And that, you know, it was like a whole other light bulb moment it was like this, the care and unconditional positive regard bloomed, I guess.
Well, and I think that speaks to how hard sometimes when we're engrossed in a situation,
mm-hmm.
for us to sometimes have like untainted eyes about what's mm-hmm. happening. Supervision can be really helpful because it's a totally different perspective, and the supervisor gets to look at it, not from living in it, but to kind of give like maybe some ideas or suggestions about what's happening or help mm-hmm. you kind of break through.
Yeah.
Like the strains within the relationship or the strains within ourselves or the triggers that we're experiencing that then taint the lens that we look at our clients through.
Mm-hmm. And I think like as a faculty, I think sometimes it's hard to get students to that vulnerable place. I think there's a fear and, you know, because you're being assessed and it's new and you're trying to do all of this stuff. And it's so helpful. And it's such a skill to be able to then take forward throughout your career. And it's easy. I don't know if you tell your students this or your supervisees, but when we're processing something and I'm able to give another perspective or another reflection, they all of a sudden like start writing down furiously. And I'm like, whoa, hold up. Like, what's going on? Like, you have to remember that I'm not in this situation. I'm removed. There's no pressure on me as I'm conceptualizing and engaging and identifying reflections because I'm not in that space. I don't know. It's not that what I'm saying is the
right answer. Yeah.
Right. It's just, and I'm not saying that I wouldn't have done exactly what you did in the session, but I'm able to be different right now because I'm not in the session. I don't know. Does that happen with you?
Oh, it definitely happens. Where they're like trying to capture my word for word. And I'm like, okay, now let's break it down. And how would you say that? Right. Cause that's me. That's not, again, you can't be me and I can't be you. So how would you rephrase that in your own words? I will say though, brand new therapists, I think just need words to say, and then they need to role play it and practice it out with you where you're the client, they're the therapist, they're putting your words in their mouth to try to like get the content down. But as they grow, I think we need to help them develop to put things in their own words. They don't need to mirror or mimic me because it's not going to be authentic and genuine in the moment. Mm-mm. It's going to sound more robotic. It's, you know, could potentially sound a little off. And so, but yes, I do agree that it is easier to look at it when you're not in the room. Mm-hmm. And you're, you know, like, just like when you watch a movie or read a book and you're like, why are you doing that?
Yeah. I get it. Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm like, it is easier when you're not sitting there. I also remind supervisees, like you're coming to supervision to grow and develop and you're choosing to they allow us to be supervisors because we have experience. So this might only be like the fourth time your butt has been in the chair as a therapist, and this would be my 1,000th time, right? So how I'm going to respond is going to sound really different than how you might respond. And it's really those, however many more experiences I have, you will be in my place in just a few years doing the same thing for others. Mm-hmm. And so it's not that I hold extra wisdom or I do more or any of that stuff. It's really,
we've been doing it for school like for a really long time.
Or just like when D will, you know, like if I do supervision with D and she'll have this, like, I'm like, why didn't I think of that?
Right.
Right. It's partly because she wasn't in the room at the moment. She wasn't caught up in the relational components and she gets to look at it from fresh eyes, but also she's just a wealth of knowledge and experience. And so of course she looks at it differently, which is why we have mentors and people we go to throughout our careers. Cause we can't know it all.
No. And I think that's what I tell my students too, is like the second you think you know it all is the day you need to quit. And I think they struggle with that. I think it's really hard for them because there's this idea that like there's a right way to do something. And I do think that there are things that can be more beneficial than, and there are things that can be harmful. And I can't, like, I had students, can we have a script? It's like, and maybe I should try it sometime. It's like, okay, so let's see what happens if I write you a script for therapy. And then how does that impact it? Or like if we role played, like here's exactly what you need to say.
I couldn't do that with a
role player. No, I could never do it with a real client. I'm thinking interview skills where they do role plays, not with actual clients. And then when they're genuinely themselves, and how does that feel different? Because it is different. It feels, you can't be connected with someone if you're just looking down, you know, like you're responding to a script as opposed to your person in front of you.
Or even if, like, I'm thinking of that activity and I was like, ooh, that would be exciting.
I know.
Have them go home and reword it in their own words and then play it out the next week where they have a little bit of time to like process and then do some type of, I don't know, or know. You know, say this, and this is what you're trying to get out. And now, so do it as the script. And now let's look at what you were trying to get at. Now I want you to do it in your own words. And what would you say? And like how those would look different, and almost record them so they could watch how they're different.
I know. Now I'm thinking about teaching doc craft. Like, what? I'm going into class tomorrow. What can I do? But even like, I think as a faculty member, there's a part where it's like, there are certain things that I want to discuss and points I want to access. And I also have to then remain flexible and open to the questions of the group or the discussion of the group and where we go. I don't think it's, in our field, everything is very ambiguous.
Yeah.
And so then you rely on those core conditions and being genuine. Yeah. Really quick, just like thinking about how I was like distracted with my Apple Watch. One of my friends talks about how she was always really focused, you know, she's a play therapist and engaging, and this child always would have her back to the therapist. And, you know, she would reflect and stuff. And she goes, the one moment my mind drifted to my grocery list, she was like, that child whipped around so quick. It was like her hair went and was like, Dr. Lynn, what are you doing? She was like, oh. Because they, you can feel it like when you're connected in that way.
I feel it in conversations, like when I go to dinner with friends, you know, or family, and you can tell when they're distracted and you're like, is everything okay? Yep. And you're like, really? I'm catching a vibe that something's on your mind, or, you know, something more pressing is happening. If we can feel it, kids feel it. Kids have much better radars about perceiving the world sometimes than we do as adults, because we've been trained out of it.
Yeah. Lee's grandmother is, I think, 107 now. And I know. And we used to live like right next door to each other in Mississippi. And I daydream a lot. Like I just kind of like go in or, you know, in and out, and she would be like, where'd you go? So I'm like, okay.
So on it, right?
Yeah. But anyways, well, thank you for talking. I think this was helpful.
Well, have an awesome day. We enjoy having you guys. Come back for the next episode.
Yep. Talk to you later. Have a good week.
Thanks.